Blitz, KFNC Mont Belvieu, Houston, a Gau Media station. If you're not down with that, we got two words for you. Are you ready? Hey, you think you could tell us what to do? You think you could tell us what to wear? You think that you're better? Well, you better get ready. Bow to the masters. Break it down! This is a RentersWarehouse.com roadshow, live from Quaker Steak and Lube in League City. This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Here's Fred Bauer and A.J. Hoffman.
And we are back on The Blitz, live here at Quaker Steak and Lube in League City. And usually I just reset the show here, but let's just jump in with our guest, AJ.
Yeah, let's go to our friend who has, man, he's really kind of brought us inside the show, one of our favorite shows, Banshee, the season finale, the series finale, I guess, which makes me a little bit sad, a lot sad, actually, on Cinemax tonight. He plays Burton on the show. Matty Roach joins us on the program. Matt, how are you, man?
I'm good, man. How are you today?
Doing well. For you, is this like kind of an emotional night?
Yeah, I mean, it's. I think I'm feeling all the feels. You know, we're. I'm real proud of the show, and I'm real grateful for being a part of the show. But the whole cast is kind of in touch today, and we're all kind of all over Twitter and. I think we're all pretty sad about it. The reality of the end of the show is sort of upon us. And it's been a great four-year run, a wild ride. And, you know, we love each other very much. And it's a terrific little family. And I think we're all pretty sad that it's over. So, yeah, man, it's a little bit of a bittersweet day. And I'm also excited to see the episode because I'll be honest with you, I have not seen it. And so there's some really crazy stuff that happens on the show tonight, and I'm really excited to watch it myself and for the fans to see it. And you know, we go out on a great note. I think I'm really looking forward to it.
Now, when you saw the script for the final episode,
yeah.
what were your thoughts? I mean, without giving anything away, obviously, but were you satisfied with the way that it ended?
Yeah, I mean, I got to be real careful because tonight, I mean, you know, a lot of things happened last week, and there's definitely a lot of stuff that's going to happen tonight. So I really don't want to give it away for the fans of the show. But, you know, Banshee has set up our creators and writers have done a really good job of setting up all of these storylines over the season and also over 4 years. And I think we do sort of two things really well, or the script did two things really well in my mind. It not only did it sort of wrap up all of the storylines in a satisfying way and deliver a kind of terrific episode of Banshee that has all of the elements of basically every episode of Banshee, but it also is a really satisfying ending to the show. I felt when I read it, oh, of course, this is how it has to end. There's really no other way. And so I definitely felt satisfied. And I was a person who was like, oh, really? We're ending the show? No way, man. I want to do this show forever. And when I read it, I thought, well, this is a hell of a way to go out. So I think I was very pleased when I read it.
Before the last episode, before episode 7 of this season,
yeah.
Fred and I were talking about how I really think that they made a mistake of making this the last season, because there seems to be so much meat left on the bone, and
yeah,
the white supremacist angle and the devil worshiper angle just still,
yeah.
It feels like they could have made so much more out of it. Was there anything like when you guys were doing the season that you guys tried to convince these guys, hey, let's do one more just
definitely.
To see what
you can't imagine how many times I walked into Adam Targum and Jonathan Tropper's office, and I was like, really, guys, what if you did this and what if you did this? And there's so many ways that we could keep the show going. And I think they felt like, you know, the essential nature of the show is Lucas Hood as a fake sheriff living in this town. And I think they kind of felt like, how long can we really support this boat without feeling like it's sort of sinking all the time? And I think there were practical challenges to the show. The show was very, very hard to make. And I think that the combination of feeling like they had gotten to the end of a story and also the challenges of making the show were made them say, okay, this is, we're at a logical ending point. I definitely feel like there's more material there. You know, I'd love to say in some fantasy world that there'll be the Banshee reunion or a Banshee movie or a Banshee, like, we'll do another season 5 years from now. I mean, that would be, I'm certainly open to that. But I, you know, we tried to convince them. I think we were all, you know, pretty much kind of going, what are you guys doing? We love this show. There's millions of fans. Don't end it. But, it, you know, it is what it is. It's done now. We stopped shooting in August, and I think the reality of it is really sinking in today. There's a lot of media stuff, and we're doing all this press, and it's all of a sudden I'm like, oh, we're not going back to Pittsburgh to shoot season 5, are we?
So last week you're in a room with five or six white supremacists.
Oh, yeah.
It was a really fun scene, but do you kind of wish that they would have was it just a matter of how much time they had as far as why they did the panoramic sort of look around the room and then came back to everybody beat up?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to express, you know. I think people don't, you know, we basically shot every episode in either 8 or 9 days, and there's only a certain amount of action sequences you can squeeze into that. The action sequences take a really long time to shoot. They take a really long time to rehearse and prep with the stunt team and choreograph, and there's a lot of technical stuff that goes into it. And I think that, you know, when you get towards the end of a season, they have to prioritize things. There's also something to be said. I actually really kind of got behind the idea that you didn't see Burton do what he did. Part of what makes Burton interesting to me is the mystery of him. We've seen him fight. We know how ferocious he is. We know how everybody is terrified of him. And in a funny way, using the fans, the audience's imagination to imagine what he does to these guys is almost, in my mind, is almost as effective as actually seeing it. I know a lot of the fans want to see that stuff, but it's almost better in your imagination than seeing it. You know, we've seen Burton at his best, so we know what he's going to do, which is kill them all. Also, as Jonathan Tropper says, there's only one way we like our Nazis on Banshee, and that's dead.
Matty, now that this is ending for you,
yeah.
What's the challenge for you as an actor to, as you move forward? Because obviously, you're going to get some opportunities off this.
I hope so.
You have to. There's no way you can't, man. You were so fantastic in this.
I appreciate that, man. Thank you.
But is it going to be kind of a challenge to make sure that you take the next role that is the right role, or you just want to work and take anything at this point?
No, I mean, look, I think when I was a younger actor, the idea of working was so exciting that I would sort of say yes to anything. But the truth is, you know, I've been doing this for almost 25 years, and I've been very lucky. I'm very grateful for all the opportunities that I have. But what's really important to me is working with people I like, working on things that I feel strongly about, and working in an environment that feels collaborative to me. Banshee was all of those things. It was incredibly difficult to make. It was certainly not easy every day. But I have a tremendous amount of love and respect for the people that I made the show with. And I have a tremendous amount of gratitude for the experience. And I only hope that every other experience sort of replicates that. And, you know, I think I've said this to you before. Matt Servito, who plays Brock Lotus, and I have a joke that it's never going to be as good as Banshee in our life. And I hope that that's not true, because Banshee was great. And if I can work in that way for the rest of my career, I'll be very, very happy. But I do have... there are things that come to me occasionally where I say respectfully, I'm gonna pass on this because this is not really what I'm wanting to do right now. And I'm very grateful to be in a position right now where I can do that. And that might change. You know, there's no guarantee. I'm not guaranteed to get work just because I was on one show this year doesn't mean I'm going to be on another show next year. And so I'm super aware of the freelance nature of the business, you know? But I, you know, I hope that Banshee has created opportunities for me. I know that people have responded to the work, which I still feel flabbergasted that people enjoy the work. It's been a great experience, you know, and I only hope that I get to repeat it in the future sometime, you know.
Well, we saw Ulrich Thompson last night. His taken a part in Blacklist, which looks to be like a pretty major role going forward.
Yeah.
I know Anthony Starr has American Gothic coming up. I have very little doubts that you will find your next project will be something big and something exciting.
I appreciate that, man. I mean, we're all kind of in touch. I saw Ulrich was at my apartment a couple of weeks ago when he was shooting Blacklist in New York, and I've been texting with Ant. He's up in Toronto shooting American Gothic, and he's having a great time up there. And Tom Pelfrey is in New York also. He's working on a new show for Marvel, and Cervito. I'm going to see Cervito tonight. We're going to live tweet the show, and there's a party in LA. Like we're all pretty tight, and you know we're very supportive of each other, and looking out for each other. And you know, we call it, like I get notes from people and saying, hey, have you heard about this job? And this is a great part for you, and you should talk to people about this. And so we're all very supportive of each other. And I just hope that, you know, I like working, and I hope that there's a good job out there for me, you know, tomorrow.
Well,
maybe tonight.
Enjoy tonight. It's sort of the culmination of all the work you guys have done on this. I think it's been a fantastic journey. I appreciate you coming on with us all the time so much, man. It's been fantastic,
listen,
to have an insight.
You guys have been early adopters of the show, and I can't tell you how grateful I am for you guys talking about the show, for you putting it out there for the show, for you bringing me into your fold. It really is cool, and I've loved hanging out with you guys on the radio and being, you know, introducing myself to your fans. And it's really been a pleasure. I'm so grateful for it.
Well, don't forget about us when you're on your next big show, my man.
Never, brother. I will never forget about you, my friend. Stay in touch with me on Twitter, will you?
Oh, of course.
Absolutely.
All right, that's Matthew Rauch, who is one of the stars of Banshee. You can check out that tonight on Cinemax, the series finale. Appreciate you taking the time, as always, Matt. We'll talk to you again soon, man.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it. You guys have a good weekend, all right?
All right, you too, man.
That is, I was telling the wife, that is one thing tonight. I don't care what we're doing before or after, but I'm going to be home to watch that show tonight.
Yeah.
And that's it. Then we can go do something.
Yeah.
But don't make any plans otherwise.
Yeah, you got to watch it live. It's so great because the stars of the show all live tweet.
Yeah.
And they'll, like, interact with the fans of the show as the show's going on. It's really fantastic.
Well, and Maddie told us that early on. That was something that Jonathan Tropper and those guys really encouraged. And I think it helped build the show through social media, kind of a lot of things that we did building this show in the beginning, they did there. They were one of the first TV shows to do that, where they wanted them all on Twitter and had them out there doing it.
Hell, that's how I met him.
Yeah, exactly. Him responding to something you tweeted. You know, and I hope people realize what a great actor he is, because the times you've heard him on the show, he's nothing like Burton in real life.
No.
So,
dude is so down to earth, such a good dude.
Yeah, he really
very,
is.
Very appreciative of him, for sure.
I'm already getting a little sad now. So, of course, for them, it's already been done. But,
yeah,
it's just the public hasn't
seen it. But I feel like when you do a show like that that's so, that you're so attached to with the audience, like you're so connected to the audience with, that it probably still feels like the job is still ongoing until everyone's seen the last episode.
Probably so. All right, we'll take a quick break and come back, short segment, and then we'll have RJ Bell after that. Don't go anywhere. It's a Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to The Blitz.
Hey, guys, sports here.
On ESPN 97.5. This is a RentersWarehouse.com roadshow, live from Quaker Steak and Lube in League City. This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5. Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we are back on The Blitz, live here at Quaker Steak and Lube. And you asked, yes, my mom is here. But I'm going to call out her friends who were supposed to be here. They didn't show up.
Oh.
Sitting over there by herself. So, mom's friends, you suck, just so you know. 409 says he made a great point of how y'all really supported and promoted the show. I would have never seen it if it weren't for you guys. We do try to put you on good stuff. And that show from the beginning was one that I just fell in love with. And then once he kind of got involved with doing this with us, it really did give an insight that you can't really get. And it's just been a fun experience. And Lamont asked, did Deadwood produce any stars? Well, Timothy Oliphant became huge after that. From Justified, and he was in a couple movies, but was Hitman in one of them. That was a big success financially. I don't know if it was that great of a movie, But yeah, he was pretty big. I would say the guy who played Charlie was also in Justified. I mean, so a few people went on out of that, but I would say Timothy Oliphant clearly the biggest star to come out of that show. And I would guess that Anthony Starr is probably got a nice future as an actor out of this one. I really hope Maddie does, but and Lily, I think that's another one. She was terrific in this.
And so. She's so hot. She's gonna find work no matter what.
Yeah, being hot helps.
I mean, she went from being the chick who showed her boobs in True Detective to a starring role in that show. She's gonna be okay. When you're built like her, you get jobs in Hollywood.
Yeah. So, I would think those are the most likely ones. But what I like is that the guys that you already knew on that show were character actor guys like Matt Servito, like Frankie Faison. I mean, those are guys that you've seen in a bunch of stuff, and you probably didn't know their names because that's what character actors are. But anyway.
But I really do think that's a special show, man. It's one of the few shows that I've never been bored with. Like,
at no point was there an episode where I said, "Yeah, you know what? Maybe the show's starting to fall apart." Maybe
they don't even do those episodes where, like, you know, we talked about Game of Thrones, how nothing major happened in this episode. It's sort of a transition episode,
yeah, filler episodes that sort of just move the story along.
They've never done that.
No,
they just don't. It's always something happening, and it's never. Surprisingly, it never got to where it felt hokey or forced. It's just a great show, man. Great writing, great acting too. Because you know that's action shows are fun, but typically it gets old after a little while.
Yeah,
and this never got old.
Well, and maybe it's because, and maybe that's something they wanted to avoid, and that's why they cut it off at four seasons.
Maybe
but
so.
I do think one of the things that I really liked about it was how well they developed the characters. And you know, one of my complaints is if I don't like any of the characters, if I don't have one to root for, I'm out, which is kind of why I got out on Walking Dead. I just got where I hated all of them. And
right.
I wanted them all to die. Well, at that point, I don't really want to watch the show anymore. This one did such a great job of no matter whether you thought they were bad guys or good guys, there never really was that. They were all a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
And there was always something about each one that you liked. And whether it was Proctor, who might have been weird and evil and sleeping with his niece. But
right. And, like, in the grand scheme, like, in the old way of watching TV, you know, Matthew's character, Burton, would be a bad guy. He's, like, the number one henchman to what would be considered the main bad guy. Yet he's such a likable character because you see he's so badass.
Well, yeah, and there's something about him. I mean, his singularity of purpose. And you can identify with that. Not him smashing a bunch of people, but you can identify with, and plus he's so delightfully weird. Yeah, the one scene where I think you reached out to him, where he was playing he was playing classical music and dancing while he was cleaning up the dead kid's body.
Yeah,
and you just look at that, and go, this guy is so freaking weird. I love him. 713-780 ESPN. Oscar said, "Do you guys watch Peaky Blinders? It's a Netflix original. I watched one episode. I couldn't understand what they were saying and dropped out."
I haven't watched it either.
Yeah, I hear good things about it, but if I have to work that hard to understand what you're saying, I'm not going to watch. It's just, you know. Mike says Breaking Bad could have went on, but they chose to end it after five seasons, and I'm okay with that. But you know what? I felt like Breaking Bad should have ended at that point. This one, I don't feel like it should end. I think Breaking Bad probably you could have done that in a half a season, but I didn't feel like there was anywhere else for that story to go, except for Walt to die. Spoiler alert. All right. Quick break. It's a Blitz on ESPN 97.5. RJ Bell up next.
This is DeAndre Hopkins, wide receiver for the Houston Texans, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
And we are back on the Blitz, live here at Quaker Steak and Lube in League City. So if you're looking for something to do, come hang out. joining us now, as he does every week, one of our all-time favorite guys. Been a good day for our all-time favorite guys. Pregame.com. You know him as the great RJ Bell. Follow him on Twitter at RJ in Vegas. Mr. Bell, what's going on?
Who's on this list now?
Well, you, and then we had Matthew Rocha on earlier, who's an actor from Banshee.
One of our favorite shows.
Yeah, by far. Tonight's the last night of it ever, so we had to preview it with him.
Okay, I don't feel competitive, so I'm okay. Anyone else on the all-time list?
No, I think that's
not that comes on with us regularly.
Yeah. All right, I can take it.
We don't like to have very many regular guests because we get tired of talking to people.
You're diminishing the accomplishment, really,
right?
Is what you're saying.
All right.
I'm the best of the regulars, but there's really not that many regulars.
No doubt.
Yeah, I think there's only two, as a matter of fact. So.
That other fellow should feel bad then.
Well, he's pretty good, too. He's just no RJ. So I want to start off with this Billy Walters story more because I think I find it fascinating that Phil Mickelson was ordered to pay money back, but there's no criminal charges, no jail time, no nothing for this guy. I don't know how familiar our listeners are with the story, but I just found that very, very strange.
Yeah, so here's the way the story's been represented. New York Times, I tweeted out at RJ in Vegas a good link to the New York Times on this. So there was a company, there was an executive within the company, and this is all alleged now, somehow was having financial trouble. So Billy Walters set up, and Billy Walters is the most famous professional sports bettor in the world. 60 Minutes a few years ago did a big piece on him. You can search for that on YouTube. You know, some people say he's made $300 million betting sports. And again, that's, you know, an opinion that circulates out there. And the story is that Billy helped him get a loan from someone and then eventually actually loaned the executive from this company some money. And then lo and behold, it looks like there was some inside information. It got to Billy. And again, this is all alleged. And he made, you know, tens of millions of dollars on it. Now, so as of right now, and to me, this is the interesting part of this, is the executive who gave the tips is working now, cooperating with the federal officials. And the guy who allegedly took the tips and made money on the inside information, you know, this is a stock market manipulation type thing, is not cooperating and getting the book thrown at him. To me, it seems like if you say there's an insider giving the information and there's an investor that takes it and bets with it, both of them, if they are doing wrong, it's wrong. But it seems like the source within the company is the more egregious, you know, almost like a drug dealer and a drug user, right? Both are illegal, but there's going to be a lot of users. If you can stop the dealers, then you probably have a better chance to stop drug use. Well, if there's people giving the information, there's going to be a lot of people that will invest in a sure thing, even if it's not legal. So it seems to me that Billy Walters, a guy who has kind of strutted around and said, I'm not going to let – the government can't get me. The government came after Billy three separate times here in Nevada, and three times Billy walked away unscathed. And I can tell you right now is it seems like from my perspective, the sports bettor that was too big for his britches got caught, and it looks like they're throwing the book at him. And I just got to wonder if this guy wasn't a guy that was 3-0 against the government, would this be such a draconian, such intense punishment it seems like they're going for Billy?
I'm fascinated that I guess Mickelson owed Billy money, and this was his way of paying it back, was to make this investment. Is that correct?
Yeah, so the story I'm hearing is there was an amount that was owed, and you know, and again, who knows how much of this is true, but there's a lot of rumors for years that, you know, Phil Mickelson is a big, big bettor. And, you know, Billy's the kind of guy is, you know, remember in golf, especially Billy Walters was for years a golf hustler. And, you know, it's not about who's better, Phil Mickelson or this 69-year-old guy, but obviously it's all about the handicaps or whatever. But these are the type of guys that would, you know, bet $500,000 on a round of golf. So, you know, it seems like that there was an amount of money owed, and that what happened was Billy Walter said, I've got a stock tip for you. Put your money in it. And if it, you know, if it succeeds, you can pay me back off of that. And it, and supposedly it was this inside information. Now, luckily for Mickelson, the authorities have ascertained that he had no knowledge that this was inside information. Rather, he thought it was just a stock tip and thus didn't know that it was illegal information, and he's going to have to pay the money back and I guess pay a fine. Now, again, who's to say how true that is, but it seems like they are unable to prove that he knew.
Let's move on to the NBA, where the title odds have moved a little bit. Are you surprised at all that the Warriors remain as heavy a favorite as they are, even though the Cavs have kind of run through everybody? I mean, I know it's just the Eastern Conference, but I would have thought the Cavs might have made a little bit of dent in that number.
Well, remember, at the start of the playoffs, the Cavs were plus 350. So 100 wins you $350. Now the Cavs are plus 150. So the payoff's significantly less. 100 wins you 150. If you look at Golden State entered the playoffs minus 150. 150 wins you 100. Now they're minus 120. So literally two series out of the four through the playoffs, one win, one loss, five-game series without home court. So you could say, yeah, within this series, they're slightly less of a favorite than they were entering the series. And actually right now, though, Golden State is still minus 340 to win the series over the Thunder. Thunder plus 280. So if you do the math, they're saying Golden State has a 75% chance and Oklahoma City has a 25% chance to win this Western Conference Finals series. So to me, what's interesting is Golden State right now has worse odds than they did starting the playoffs, but Cleveland has significantly better odds than starting the playoffs. So I would make the case there has been a significant movement. By the way, to finish the list, OKC 7-1, and then check this out. Conference Finals, two games in, Toronto 300-1 to win the NBA Finals. They're eight wins away, and they're 300-1.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, they might as well be 50 wins away, though.
Yeah.
how much of that, though, is in terms of the Warriors and Cavs is a result of the Spurs being knocked out when they were second favorite most of the way?
Well, if anything, that would help Golden State's odds. Unequivocally, San Antonio would have had closer odds to Golden State in the Western Conference Final than OKC. So, if anything, and this actually happened, is when it was going into Game 6, San Antonio at OKC, is San Antonio was a small favorite or right around pick'em in that game, and Golden State was already in the conference finals, and Golden State was minus 150 at the time to win the title. After San Antonio lost that game, the next day, Golden State went to minus 170. And Golden State hadn't played a game, obviously. So really, Oklahoma City was considered to be the lesser team entering the conference final relative to San Antonio. So if anything, Golden State, now it's 1-1, you might say, well, it's a slightly different story. But in general, Vegas believed, and I think still believes, San Antonio is a better team than OKC.
How did the odds go, like when Oklahoma City won the first game, what kind of adjustment was there of that? And then did it go back to normal after Golden State won the second?
Yeah, this was shocking. Is entering the second game, so you've got a team that didn't really play that well in OKC, especially in the first half of game one, winning the game. And a lot of talk was, wow, they didn't even play that one. They still were able to win. But Golden State was still minus 200. You had to bet $2 to win $1 to win the series, even though they were down 0-1, didn't have home court at that point. So it really just shows you. And if you look at the Sunday line, and we can look ahead here, and Saturday is Cleveland plays Toronto, and then Sunday Golden State plays at OKC. On Sunday, Golden State is a 2.5-point favorite on the road at OKC. So if you do the math on home court advantage, which is right around 4 points for each of these teams, that means Golden State is 6.5 points better. Now, under that math, if the game was in Golden State, 4 points for home field, 6.5 means Golden State would be 10.5. So to me, this is an eye-popping line. I think there's real value on OKC. I think they're underrated, and I think this is a situation. And again, I haven't heard the latest update on Adams and how beat up he is. But other than a potential injury there, I think it's a situation where Golden State is a team the public loves. Obviously, Steph Curry looks unbeatable. You know, that's the thing. Where someone looks like Superman like that is the public loves to bet on those teams. They don't want to bet against those teams. And I think the real value, especially in Game 3, is on the Thunder.
All right, that's RJ Bell. RJ, always great stuff, my friend, and look forward to talking to you again next week.
Thanks, guys.
All right, RJ Bell, pregame.com. Follow him on Twitter at RJ in Vegas. All right, we're going to take a very quick break. We come back. A Zadok Jewelers gym today. Gym of the day. In fact, I have two of them.
Double gym?
They're both sex related.
Oh.
I don't know if they're good or bad, though.
Well, I'll be the judge.
You'll just have to stay tuned in to find out. Don't go anywhere. It's a Blitz on ESPN 975.
This is the Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
The 141st running of the Preakness Stakes, 5 p.m. Saturday on ESPN 97.5.
And we are back on the Blitz. Preakness tomorrow, right here on ESPN 97.5. Hey, join us at Quaker Steak and Lube on 45 at FM 646 in League City until 7 o'clock. Come out for the Triple Atomic Wing Challenge.
It's coming up in less than an hour.
That's right. That'll be at 6:30. And Friday special features local brewery Running Walker IPA for just $4, plus lots of other happy hour specials. Visit ESPN975.com for more info. So if you want to get out here for the Wing Challenge, you have approximately, a little more than 30 minutes to get out here. So a couple things mentioned the Preakness tomorrow. I did post my breakdown earlier today, so it's on Twitter and Facebook. So if you're not on those things, just go to examiner.com and search for me. But I have some trifectas that won't cost you a lot of money and could be very profitable. And I feel very good about them.
You're a generous man, Fred.
I like to take care of the people, but we are going to bounce back in a big way. All right, let's do the Zadok Jewelers Gem of the Day.
The Gem of the Day. It's the gem of the day, the Zadok Jeweler gem of the day.
Well, this isn't good.
Uh-oh.
The internet has blocked one of my stories here.
Oh, no.
But, well, we'll start with the first one, and I'll get the other one on my phone. But, all right, I'm sure life in the Hamptons is a little different than what people like you and I are used to.
I'm sure.
And I guess there's a lot of rich women who spend their summers in the Hamptons while the husbands go to New York to work.
I'm sure that's also the case.
Yeah, we've seen a lot of movies and stuff where that's the case. Well, do you know what the new thing for these rich, bored women is?
I'd love to know.
Apparently.
What gets them going?
They're engaging in steamy affairs with their female fitness instructors.
Apparently.
Many of these trainers provide a sexual outlet for their flirty clients, with a former instructor noting that a sensual connection was sometimes used to boost their progress. One of the trainers said, they say, "I think about you all the time. If being attracted to us helps motivate, okay. But it's not all fantasy." That same trainer said that she's had sex with her married female clients before. Recent sex research has been examining this idea of female flexuality. Apparently, they surveyed 1,015 women between the ages of 18 and 44. 47% have been attracted to another female, while 31% have had a sexual encounter with a woman. So,
strong percentages.
Yeah, those numbers are up there. And obviously, it's much higher in the Hamptons.
You've had sex with a woman before, haven't you?
Yes, a few times.
Good for you.
Yeah.
You're so progressive.
I believe in it.
Yeah.
You know, I believe it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And my other story unfortunately, the internet here won't let me get, so I'm going to have to try to get it on my phone.
So it must be spicier than that story, even.
It's not really. I think there's some words in it that I was going to kind of edit out.
Oh.
That, you know, I wasn't going to use the actual
Is
words.
It about animal sex?
No.
Because that site should be blocked if
yeah,
that's
it's
the
not,
case.
It's not letting me on my phone either, so.
Interesting.
Basically, what it was about was
you were on a shady ass website, bro.
Probably so. So, unfortunately, the Hampton Housewives will have to be our only Zadok Jewelers gem of the day.
The gem of the day. It's the gem of the day. The Zadok Jeweler gem of the day.
Just a follow-up. Contextual variables make it more or less likely for a woman to act on their female flexuality, according to biological anthropologist Natalia Reagan.
I feel like if you said that you've got 100 straight women and 100 straight men, that the 100 straight women, the percentage that is willing to experiment with the other side is probably way greater.
Oh, absolutely.
Than
no,
with
no
men.
Doubt. So the Hamptons is just one place worldwide where a perfect storm of factors can aid its expression.
You mean okay. People have a lot of money and
a lot of money and time and they're bored.
And they're sitting around doing nothing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Boredom can do that.
I could see that.
But I will never live in the Hamptons or probably even go to the Hamptons. So
I'll tell you what: if you went without a penis for 4 years, got that $10 million, you could get a nice place up there in the Hamptons.
I have no interest.
There. You could explore your flexuality.
No, I couldn't because it doesn't exist. So, yeah, sorry.
All right,
sorry. I'm pretty boring when it comes to that.
You're a one trick pony.
I'm
huh?
a one trick pony. Yeah. I like one thing, and that's it. So
you think that, but wait till you have a super hot workout instructor up there.
Well, I mean, if he looks like Cristiano Ronaldo.
It could be Arnold. What if Arnold was your personal trainer?
Nah, because
I want you to pretend to be my maid in the Hamptons, Fred.
Yeah, no, because I've seen your maid, and if you've been there, you ain't going here. That would be my response.
Climb on top of the kitchen counter and reach that bowl on the top.
Yeah, no. Not happening. Yeah, maybe Cristiano Ronaldo, if it looked like him.
No, it has to be Arnold.
Oh, well, if it's Arnold, it's not happening. Sorry.
But what if he was like, what if it was Arnold circa 1983 when he was like all hulked out? Like, you know, those black and white pictures of Arnold where he goes like that and it's like a mountain?
Yeah, like Conan.
Would you be into that?
The Conan the Barbarian Arnold.
Yeah.
Not so much.
More or less than old saggy balls Conan, though.
Well, yeah, more, but. It's neither. I mean, zero is zero.
Would you rather?
You can't go less than zero.
Who would you rather test your flexuality with out in the Hamptons? Someone built like Arnold, or someone built like Jimmy Fallon, who's a little more feminine?
It'd have to be somebody more feminine.
Okay.
And a lot of alcohol involved. All right, let's take a quick break. Mercifully, just one more hour of this nonsense to go. It's the Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
Like a charm, hey, like a charm, hey. ESPN 97.5.